here are the WGXC headlines for Thursday, March 2nd. The Eli Lilly company will cut the list price for a 10-millimeter vial of insulin from $274 to $66.40. California Parole Board on February 1st denied parole for Robert F. Kennedy assassin Sirhan Sirhan, who is now 78. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz on March 2nd called on China to not send weapons to Russia and instead use its influence to press Moscow for the withdrawal of Russian troops from Ukraine. State Senator Michelle Hinchey on March 1st called for free school meals for all students in New York. Section 8 housing vouchers have been raised to 120% in Hudson, meaning a decrease in tenants' portion of the rent and an increase in the share the Hudson Housing Authority will cover. In Tannersville, incumbent Democrat Lee McGonigal faces Republican David Schneider for town supervisor in a March 21st vote. A Rhinebeck restaurant is alleging a conspiracy from town officials to disrupt its business. The owner of Gigi Trattoria is suing local officials, claiming that it was harassed over purported code violations, which interfered with its lease negotiations.
Hello, folks. You're listening to the Mad Dog, Matt Wilson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we have a very busy morning show this morning. We're going to hear from WGXC's Randall Martin and Kim Singletary talking to Columbia County Fair Housing Officer William Fisher about local housing issues, as we're in the midst of an affordable housing crisis locally. We'll also hear about what movies are playing locally from Amanda Lees and Jenny Getty from their Dim the Lights show last night. And we'll hear national headlines from the Public News Service, the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate, and more on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned for it all. After Jason Martin from Troy finishes singing this song, it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show.
Turns the blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth Powell of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, March 2nd. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about these stories. Jamel Cutler reports in Columbia Green Media that a group of citizens calling themselves the Summit Lake Conservation Group successfully sued the Village of Philmont Planning Board, overturning their approval of a large high-end housing subdivision there. Third Judicial District Supreme Court Judge Richard Mott overturned the Planning Board approval in January in an Article 78 case. The Clover Reach Partners LLC development is proposed alongside Summit Lake, the body of water at the center of Philmont. Karen Schomer, a former WGXC programmer and one of the members of the group overturning the approval, said the Planning Board barely considered any environmental factors when it originally approved the project last year. Quote, "We were hopeful that the Planning Board will stop and take a hard look at the environmental impact," unquote, she said. Quote, "Instead, they just brushed everything aside and moved the project forward as complete. We're incredibly disappointed that the Planning Board isn't working harder to protect that lake environment," unquote. Schomer explains some of the environmental concerns. Quote, "There's a lot of documented wildlife, native plant and flower species, and bald eagles are there almost every day. We know it's an environmentally rich area, and we're concerned about what putting in a road and building 16 houses on this sloped hillside is going to do to the biodiversity that we have at Summit Lake," unquote. The Planning Board is now taking up the proposal again with a public hearing at 7 p.m. March 20th at the Philmont Village Hall. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Nancy Kern at Columbia Green Media reports that the Greene County Legislature has authorized $9,000 to fund 10 emergency medical technicians recruits to train with the EMS Council at a cost of $900 per individual training. The resolution authorizing the funding said that Greene County has a shortage of paramedics and that many leaving the field could result in, quote, "an increase in deaths among Greene County citizens," unquote. Stephen Neer, Chief of Operations for Greene County Paramedics, said, quote, "You have holes in schedules that administrators have having to fill open slots to provide ambulances on the road. A lot of agencies normally had two or three ambulances pre-pandemic, but they're struggling to put one or two now. The agency I used to work for had five ambulances. Now they're struggling to get three. It's difficult to hang on to the EMTs you have," unquote. The shortage of emergency first responders is national, and since training takes 6 months, it is not a problem that can be quickly fixed. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. News 10 in Albany reports that on March 1st, the federal government ended pandemic-era payments for low-income families on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The program averaged around an extra $90 per person each month for 3 years. The program's demise may lead families to some of the free food fridge programs or food pantries locally. There are free food fridges in Albany, Catskill, and Hudson, among other locations. It is a confidential, barrier-free way to access food items. Jamela Anderson, who started the Albany Free Fridge, said, quote, "We knew the pandemic did so much damage, and now we're feeling the after effects, so food costs are so high. So even if you have $95 extra in your SNAP benefits, that's still not going to get you what it did maybe 2 or 3 years ago," unquote. The food pantries for the Capital District Executive Director Natasha Pernicki said, quote, "Food pantries are here to help. There are food pantries throughout the Capital Region and New York State, and if people don't know where to turn, it's easy to use our map at thefoodpantries.org to search for food pantries across New York State," unquote. Both local free fridge programs and food pantries always need donations, too, for anyone who wants to help with Hudson Valley hunger. Read more about this story at News 10 website. And WNYT reports that Representative Paul Tonko, who represents Albany County and the rest of the 20th Congressional District, is crowing about funding for two local fire departments. The Burnt Hills Fire Department gets more than $121,000, and the South Glens Falls Fire Company will receive about $35,000. The departments will use the money for radios, equipment maintenance, and other safety equipment. Read more about this story at WNYT. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, March 2nd. Local early morning temperature range is tight, falling between 33 degrees in Medusa and 37 degrees in Copaite. Regional average soil temperature is 35 degrees. Rain rolls through the region this morning. Areas that are elevated might see some icing. Check road conditions before heading out. Things should generally dry out by 1 p.m. and we get a high temperature of 48 degrees at 2 p.m. It will be windy this afternoon and conditions will be cold, so layer up. Overnight, temperatures drop to 26 degrees. Tomorrow, March makes its presence known as it enters like a lion. A confused lion. Snow is going to fall definitely somewhere in the listening area. Confidence as to when and where is low. Straddling the freezing point, areas that are elevated and to the north, like Greenville, Windham, Skodak, Kinderhook, will see more snow. Areas to the south, Kingston, Rhinebeck, Claremont, might see precipitation linger a bit longer as rain. Overnight, about 5 inches of snow can be expected, but then it should turn to rain by 11 a.m. Saturday morning. It continues all day, and if you got nothing to do Saturday, you might just not have to shovel at all. We get a high of 39 degrees at 2 p.m. Overnight, rain turns back to snow, leaving a dusting on the ground by sunup. Sunday will be windy but dry with a high of 39. Sunset today will be at 5:32 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:25 a.m. Looking way up, we see open coronal holes are spewing plasma due to arrive early next week. X-class flare chances are at 15%. Solar wind speed is currently 440.5 kilometers per second at 0.11 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, then fair across the board with good conditions below 8 MHz overnight. Time to make some contacts. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2.3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 105. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate, who will see you tonight right here on WGXC at 7 p.m. for the Thingularity Radio Show.
The international struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survive All offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris, plus a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survive All shelter today.
Now let's hear from Columbia County-based drummer, composer, percussionist, Bobby Previtt. He's got a 2022 album out, a solo electronic record called Dark Current. Let's listen to The Surveyor.
Thank you. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have a huge epidemic of fentanyl problem created by intentional acts by the cartels. We are doing everything we can within our resources to fight that.
Attorney General Merrick Garland testified before a Senate committee Wednesday facing questions about the investigation into Hunter Biden and the department's response to the fentanyl crisis. Another hearing focused on Denver International Airport CEO Phil Washington's confirmation to lead the Federal Aviation Administration. Democrats rallied behind President Biden's pick, while Republicans like Texas Senator Ted Cruz heavily criticized Washington's lack of aviation safety experience.
As I look at your record, I see a record where you've got experience with buses, you've got experience with trains. Buses and trains are very different from planes.
Other committee members focused on Washington's successes as an Army veteran who has led transit agencies in Denver and Los Angeles and one of the largest airports in the world. The Senate passed a resolution nullifying a Biden administration Department of Labor rule on environmental, social, and governance investing, which some are saying could lead to Biden's first veto. The rule allows managers of retirement plans to weigh climate change as well as other environmental, social, and governance issues in their investment decisions. Republicans see the measure as the Biden administration prioritizing a liberal agenda instead of protecting retirement accounts. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, along with other GOP leaders, discussed the Parents' Bill of Rights proposal, which aims to provide more transparency to parents about their children's educational experience. Bill author and Louisiana Representative Julia Letlow says virtual learning ushered in by the pandemic gave parents an opportunity to see what their kids were learning and left many parents disheartened.
And so then we did the right thing, right? We went to our school boards and we voiced our displeasure, but we were turned away, and some of us were even labeled domestic terrorists.
Public education has become a hot topic issue for GOP lawmakers, resulting in what some are now calling a culture war over school curriculum. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden nominated Julie Sue to replace outgoing Marty Walsh as Secretary of Labor. If confirmed for the position, she will be the first Asian American to serve in Biden's cabinet.
Mr. President, when you said you wanted to be the most pro-worker, pro-union president in history and restore decency and build the middle class, I said, sign me up for that. I want to help do that.
During the White House ceremony, President Biden called Sue the American dream. Sue was confirmed by the Senate in 2021 to her current role as Deputy Labor Secretary. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Remember our reports on Cochise County, Arizona's election chaos caused by election deniers on the County Board of Supervisors? The rural Arizona county of 126,000 is back in the news because it wants to transfer election oversight to, you guessed it, another election denier. Back in November, state officials had to stop the Board of Supervisors from requiring 47,284 ballots be counted by hand. Then the supervisors refused to certify the election until compelled by the Arizona Secretary of State and a county court. This January, the county's veteran elections director resigned, citing a threatening work environment and harassment from citizens. VoteBeat Arizona reports that county supervisors are now proposing to transfer the election director's responsibilities to county recorder David Stevens, who volunteered to supervise the November hand count but had never conducted an election. According to VoteBeat's reporting, Stevens is a director of the Elections Fairness Institute, a nonprofit run by Mark Fincham, a January 6th participant and failed candidate for Arizona Secretary of State who claimed the 2020 election was rigged. Monday, the Arizona State Solicitor General issued a letter to the Cochise County Attorney saying that giving all election responsibilities to any county recorder would raise, quote, serious questions about the legality of the board's intended action. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Here are some events this week on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, where you can add your own event and have it read on the radio in the WGXC community calendar. Abby Lappin leads Spring Movement and Music Storytime at the Hudson Area Library on Thursday, March 2nd at 4 p.m. And then later at the library at 6 p.m., they host an exhibition from the local Historical Maps and Atlases collection, which is on view in March and April this year. A collection of maps from 1740 to 2001. And the opening reception for that exhibit of historic maps of Hudson is at 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Thursday, March 2nd at the Hudson Area Library. Also Thursday, March 2nd, the band Florist from up on the mountaintop around Palinville Way, they're playing in Woodstock at the Colony Cafe at 8 p.m. Thursday, March 2nd, the band Florist. Friday, March 3rd, there is a sourdough bread baking contest at Dewey Hall in Sheffield, Massachusetts. That's at 5:30 p.m. Saturday, March 4th, the Black Earth Wisdom book release is at the Hudson Area Library at 1 p.m. It's by Leah Penniman. The Live for Art Gallery has storytellers Saturday, March 4th at 2 p.m. The Greene County Council on the Arts are Create, their exhibition space on 398 Main Street in Catskill, opens an exhibit called Stepping Out of History, Telling Our Own Story on Saturday, March 4th from 4 to 6 p.m. is the opening reception. It's a group exhibition. Also, Saturday, March 4th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, down the street from the Create Space, Waldo Witt, Velvet Moon, and Katie Condrit and Henry Grant all perform. WGXC will have a live web stream of the entire show. Sunday, March 5th, the Dolls Drag Brunch is at the Glens Falls House up on Round Top. That's at 11 a.m. at the Trotwood Restaurant there. Also, Sunday, March 5th is the annual Oakdale Plunge at the Oakdale Lake Beach House at noon on Sunday. Proceeds from the event go to the Hudson Youth Department Waterfront Program and the Hudson Fire Department's Water Rescue and Dive Team. And the traditional Irish jam session is every week Sundays at the Shamrock House in East Durham. That's from 2 to 5 p.m. Tuesday, March 7th, the Catskill Town Board has a committee meeting, and all Catskill Town Board meetings have a live webcast, so you can turn out to the Catskill Town Hall at 439 Main Street, or tune in at a web stream at wgxc.org/listen to the Catskill Town Board meeting Tuesday, March 7th at 6:30 p.m. Find these and other events on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. The band Algiers put out a new album in 2023 called Shook, and this song is called I Can't Stand It from that album.
Oh, Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Krista Hestorfer, who is the Government Relations Manager at Hunger Solutions New York, a group that works to solve hunger in our state. And they recently held a press conference to draw attention to the fact that the programs that were developed during the pandemic to extend SNAP benefits, people used to call it the food stamp benefit, are expiring because the federal government believes that the pandemic is over with. So, Crystal, can you maybe just give us a little introduction to Hunger Solutions and what is the problem?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. I am here from Hunger Solutions New York. We are a statewide nonprofit organization dedicated to alleviating hunger. And our focus is maximizing the federal nutrition assistance programs. That includes SNAP, as you mentioned, WIC, school meals, summer meals, and the Child and Adult Care Food Program. So we really are working to maximize those resources, make sure that all eligible low-income New Yorkers are connected with them, and that we're fully leveraging the anti-hunger programs that are our nation's first line of defense against hunger. And the issue that you alluded to in your introductory remarks is that the temporary federal supports that have been in place on these programs are expiring one by one. So at the start of this school year, we saw that statewide 726,000 students lost access to free school meals when federal waivers expired. And as of today, as of March 2023, 2.8 million New Yorkers who rely on SNAP benefits will no longer receive the emergency allotments that the federal government provided starting in 2020. Those emergency allotments brought folks' benefits up to the maximum amount or up to an additional $95 above that. That was a critical support throughout the pandemic, and grocery prices remain at historic highs. So we're seeing really what amounts to a hunger cliff for families across the state.
Yeah, and I understand some of the households are receiving, reduction in benefits in SNAP, several hundred dollars. And also the situation is certainly in recent years, we've seen a big spike in inflation, but a lot of that inflation has actually been driven by the increase in food prices.
Sure, we're all feeling this. We're all seeing the rising grocery costs. But for low-income families who rely on the federal safety net to ensure that they can put food on the table, this is a really devastating reduction in benefits. All SNAP households are going to feel this. All SNAP households will lose at a minimum $95 in monthly SNAP benefits. And some households may see a much larger decrease in their benefit depending on what the maximum amount is for their household and what their normal benefit amount is. So I should be clear that folks are going to continue to receive their normal SNAP benefit amount, but we are going to lose that emergency allotment that has really helped families throughout the pandemic.
Now, I was focusing on SNAP because March 1st was the day that the supplemental increase benefits ended. But as you mentioned, over 700,000 students also losing access to free, school meals. What are some of the things you're hoping that Governor Hochul and state lawmakers may step in to help deal with the hunger problem?
We're really hoping New York will step up, fill this gap, make sure that folks across our state have access to the nutrition resources that they need. We are urging the legislature and the governor to include healthy school meals for all New York kids in the final state budget. This would ensure that all students across the state have access to free school breakfast and lunch, regardless of income or application status. It would be a fundamental part of a child's education, just like textbooks and transportation. We're also asking the legislature and the governor to come together and fully fund anti-hunger proposals that are on the table, including enhanced funding for SNAP outreach and application assistance to make sure that families who are eligible are able to connect with those benefits. That's a program that we manage statewide called the Nutrition Outreach and Education Program. that is a huge support for families who are not yet connected with SNAP, but ought to be and could be really benefiting from that program. And we're also encouraging the legislature and the governor to fully fund HIPNAP and Nourish New York, which are important funding streams to support the emergency food sector of food banks, soup kitchens, and other emergency food providers who are expecting to see an increase in demand with the reduction in SNAP benefits.
Now, I'm not as well versed in the state budget as I used to be, but you know, my recollections were talking about a couple hundred million dollars overall for the state budget. And I did read recently, I thought that Governor Hochul wanted to put aside about something like $8 billion into a rainy day fund because she doesn't think it's raining yet. How much money are we actually talking about you trying to get an increase in funding for these various anti-hunger initiatives?
It's for the Healthy School Meals for All proposal. We're looking at around $200 million, which is a drop in the bucket for New York State's budget, as you mentioned. It's a really meaningful investment and one that the state could absolutely find funding for. When it comes to our, you know, SNAP outreach and education through the Nutrition Outreach and Education Program, we're asking for an increase from the executive budget of about $1.9 million. And that investment has in recent years had a return of 27-1 to the state. So it's really a sound investment to make. It ensures that folks have access to the nutrition resources that they need to thrive. And it maximizes federal programs that provide this support for families.
And, you know, most of these federal programs are largely funded by federal dollars. When you get more, you know, people to sign up, you're bringing not only helping to reduce hunger and get healthier kids and families, but you're also bringing, you know, money into to local stores. Now, I remember when I used to, you know, work with the Hunger Action Network, I was surprised that a fairly high percentage of the people going to these food pantries and soup kitchens, even though they may have been income eligible, a lot of them are still not getting, you know, actually SNAP benefits. Has that been improving over time, or are there still a lot of people eligible who are not getting signed up or having problems navigating the system?
New York does fairly well at reaching eligible households with SNAP, but that doesn't mean that there's not substantial opportunity for growth. We have special eligibility rules in New York that would allow even more families to qualify for SNAP who may not realize it. Families that have earned income that is a little bit higher than the typical SNAP income guidelines, folks who have childcare costs, and folks who are disabled or are older adults, all have slightly different income guidelines. And so we know that there are many more families that could be benefiting from the program and aren't. Our Nutrition Outreach and Education Program provides outreach across the state to make sure that folks are aware of the program. And it also provides free and confidential pre-screenings and application assistance to help people through every step of the process and make it as easy as possible for them to connect to the benefits. I will say one number I can share is that there's about 200,000 older New Yorkers who are estimated to be eligible for SNAP but not participating. So that's been a real focus of ours, is making sure that all of those households are connected as well.
Now, my son these days is working with the New York Immigration Coalition. And I kind of recollect that some of the federal nutrition programs, you know, did provide benefits to undocumented workers, I think particularly perhaps the school meals program, but others did not. How are immigrants faring under all this in about a minute we got left?
We did see that during prior administrations, federal administrations, there were some changes in rules that caused a chilling effect among many immigrant communities and made them hesitant to participate in federal nutrition programs. But you're exactly right that there are many folks who could still qualify depending on the program. There's different regulations that I'm sure we can't cover in a minute. But I would really encourage folks to, you know, reach out to their local NOAP coordinator if they have one, to visit our website, which I can share, to get some more information, because we do know that a lot of immigrants in New York State can and should be participating in these programs as well.
And what is that a website?
It is hungersolutionsny.org.
Easy one to remember. Krista, Krista Hestoffer, Government Relations Manager, Hunger Solutions, New York. Good luck. And this is Mark Tunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
The grief forest is home to confused young things. I hear a small bell. The cat hides behind a cabinet. Sapling branches catch fur. A sign above the doorway says low bridge. My father keeps liquor in the living room. This is where we set up the Christmas tree. But it isn't December. There is no tree. He pours liquor into a stainless steel shaker filled with ice, then strains the liquid into a glass. He says, "Come over here." He says, "Stop." But I won't stop. He tells me to pull down my pants. My father makes me stop. Flooding and flowering. He says, "You'll grow where I say you can grow. On the hillside where the factory burned." He prints his hand on my skin. The dam stops the river. The train no longer comes through. Creosote ties, mossy and decayed, lie on either side of a berm that rises above the swamp and cuts through exposed rock.
That was Grief Forest from Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer and sound artist Peter Taylor from their 2022 album Agro Dulce.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Julia Rock at New York Focus reports that on December 9th last year, New York Governor Kathy Hochul vetoed a bill that would have required most freight trains to be operated by at least a conductor and an engineer. It was a safety measure that both rail unions and bipartisan lawmakers supported. But railroad companies and business groups opposed it, and now Hochul's recent claims that train safety is her top priority after an Ohio train disaster in early February are being questioned. Rail companies have cut their workforces by nearly 30% in recent years and are operating longer and heavier trains now with smaller crews. Democratic Senator Tim Kennedy, the Transportation Committee chair and the Senate sponsor of the rail safety bill that Hochul vetoed, said, and I quote, "This bill was part of a bigger look at the rail industry and attempted to strengthen protections for both workers and communities they travel through every day. The devastation that continues to unfold in East Palestine is the strongest form of evidence that rail safety needs to be prioritized, both in New York and across the country," end quote. Business groups, including Railroads of New York, the statewide industry group that represents CSX, Canadian National, Canadian Pacific, and Norfolk Southern, among others, reported lobbying against the bill in state filings reviewed by New York Focus. Hochul wrote in her veto memo that she did not sign the bill because she said federal laws and pending rulemaking preempt the legislation. James Lewis, national vice president of the 57,000-member Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, said, and I quote, "She had an opportunity to improve rail safety, and she let it go. If she feels safety is important, we could get that bill reintroduced and put it through. Except now the railroads are using the argument that it's preempted," end quote. The Obama administration was working on a similar federal bill, which the Trump administration abandoned. The Troy Record reports that Governor Kathy Hochul's favorability and job approval ratings fell slightly in the Siena poll of registered New York State voters released February 27th. Among New Yorkers, President Joe Biden's favorability rating is up slightly from the month before to his best rating since October 2021. Those polls said crime should be Albany's top priority, followed by the cost of living and affordable housing, followed by public health, the environment, and racial justice. Siena College pollster Steven Greenberg said, and I quote, "Both Hochul's favorability and job approval ratings dipped a little this month, but her favorability remained slightly positive and her overall job approval rating remained strong, particularly with and only with Democrats," end quote. Read more about this story in the Troy Record. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Republican Representative Lee Zeldin and Democrat Representative Tom Suozzi, who both unsuccessfully ran for governor against Kathy Hochul last year, announced new jobs this week. Zeldin on March 1st announced he will lead the political action committee called Leadership America Needs PAC. Suozzi is becoming co-chair at a consulting firm, Actum LLC. Zeldin's move keeps him in politics, as he says the committee will be, and I quote, "engaging new Republican voters," end quote, and also recruiting new candidates. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Thursday, March 2nd. And we begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Mobil in Caro has gas at $3.35 a gallon. That's the lowest according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast is just a 29 on Thursday. That's low. The UV index is a 2, which is considered low, but seems high. The Hudson River water temperature in Albany is just above 38 degrees. And on average, over the past 10 years on March 2nd, it's averaged just above 36 degrees. So it's about 2 degrees warmer than in the last 10 years. National Weather Service in Albany says the rain continues till around 10 a.m. with cloudy skies prevailing today and a high of 46. There should be a lot of wind from the south, 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming west, 16 to 20 miles per hour, 21 miles per hour in the afternoon, with gusts as high as 31 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Tonight, partly cloudy is the forecast with a low around 23 and a northwest wind 13 to 21 miles per hour with gusts as high as 32 miles per hour. Friday, there is a chance of snow, mainly after 1 p.m., with increasing clouds during the day and a high near 38. Northwest wind 5 to 8 miles per hour, becoming southeast in the afternoon. How many inches of snow? 3 to 7 possible. Friday night, the snow continues, possibly mixed with sleet. It depends how far south you are. The farther south you go, the more sleet and rain will be mixed in. The farther north, it'll be all snow. So there'll also be windy conditions with a wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, increasing to 17 to 22 miles per hour in the evening with gusts as high as 33 miles per hour. Saturday, the snow ends around 1. Snow showers are possible after that with a high of 37 and an east wind 6 to 13 miles per hour and a low around 28 on Saturday night. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.